You're listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. You can hear two separate segments about the town of Ashland, Virginia on this series. One segment will tell you about the history of Ashland. The other segment will tell you about the modern-day town of Ashland. On this segment, you're going to hear about the history of Ashland, just 15 minutes north of Richmond. With me is Roseanne Schauf, president of the Ashland Museum Board of Directors. Ashland was created by a railroad. Tell us about it.
That's right. There was nothing there until 1836. Well, there were trees, but there was nothing else there until 1836 when the Richmond, Fredericksburg, and Potomac Railroad Company laid their first line of tracks through town, just up to the town, actually. eventually, it was to go all the way up to Falmouth and Potomac Creek, where a passenger from Richmond to Washington, D.C., could board a steamer boat to Alexandria. They weren't thinking of taking the train all the way up there. It was expensive to build bridges, and they were just thinking as to shortcut the trip that had been several days to about a day. And they came through town at a blazing speed of about 15 miles per hour. Just unheard of. It would have had to, if it had been stagecoach, which was the way they used to come, the poor horses would have been worn out after a mile. So anyway, it's really begun by the railroad, but it wasn't Ashland at the beginning. It was called Slash Cottage. The railroad decided it needed a hotel about part way up to Aquia Creek or Potomac Creek, and where the trains could get a refill on the coal and the water and the sand and all the stuff they need to run their steam engines, and the people could get off and have a meal. Or they started building this wonderful Slash Cottage Resort. They discovered, my goodness, they discovered there was mineral water in the well. It was, they bragged about its chalybeate waters, healthy waters, and encouraged people to come to Slash Cottage for their health. There was a hotel, a ballroom, bathhouses, a bowling alley, and there was this wonderful little building right in the middle, sort of an octagon building, where they created acetylene gas, and that lit the grounds inside and out.
Are you saying that all of this was built by, or at least encouraged by, the railroad?
It was built by the railroad. The railroad owned it.
There was nothing there prior
to
that?
There was nothing. No, there. One of the reasons they purchased this property, besides the fact that it was right away, was because there was a good stand of hardwood, and they could use that on their trains.
There was nothing there besides Slash Cottage. Was that an actual place?
That was an actual place, and we have the only thing we have is a lithograph showing all the buildings, and the other thing we have is a plaque showing all the buildings and what they were. The plaque gives us the names of the buildings. That's how we know that the little octagon thing was the gas house. And there were a couple of bars on that property, and by 1854, it was a going concern. Local military regiments like to come up there and practice their military prowess, and then at the end of a weekend, they would invite all the ladies and the dignitaries from Richmond to come up, and they'd have a regimental ball. The last one was held in 1858, and this was before thought of secession. And it was just a lovely place to come. The reason it was called Slash Cottage, which seems like an odd name, everywhere else Slash is sort of a swampy place where trees have been cut. Well, it turns out slashes have a very specific meaning to our part of Hanover County. And if you look up in an historic dictionary, it specifically mentions Henry Clay. Henry Clay, who was born nearby out on Mount Hermon Road, just east of Ashland, he was born out there. Later he became a very famous legislator in the federal government, and he moved to Kentucky, built himself a mansion called Ashland, and as he was running for office, his biographers would call him the Millboy of the Slashes. He came from humble beginnings, and so he was the Millboy of the Slashes because our area of Hanover is called the Slashes of Hanover. So it had a romantic connotation, so that's why they called it Slash Cottage. But Henry Clay died in 1852, I believe. In 1855, Slash Cottage, the village, decided to call itself Ashland, the village, just to confuse people a little bit. And it wanted to claim Henry Clay's as native son, so that was sort of the way to do it. A couple of years later, well, more than that, in 1858, the town incorporated itself as a going little town in the area. Actually, we're the only incorporated town in Hanover, and actually in this northern Richmond area. And we've remained small, and we've remained intimate, just like we were back then. Those guys that developed Ashland, in 1854, the RFMP laid out the town and into residential lots along the railroad tracks, believe it or not, and began to sell residential lots along there. But they knew what they were doing.
The railroad wanted to be real estate developers?
Yes, yes. And RFMP has always been in real estate until very recently. But they became real estate developers, sold these lots. Some of them were 10 acres. I think there was one that was 43 acres. In subsequent years, those have been subdivided into smaller 1 acre, 3 acre, half acre lots. But they each lot came with conditions that said you cannot sell liquor and you must build a house for white people within 18 months. That shows you the prejudice of the time. But, of course, they didn't consider it prejudice. That was just normal for them. And it was not until 1950-something that the RFMP actually recorded a retraction of those restrictions in the Hanover Courthouse so that people could build a house for other than a white person, and so that they could, in certain places, sell liquor, because they were having to, every time a piece of property changed hands, they were having to, the RFMP company was having to send a retraction of those restrictions. Anyway, so people started building homes along the railroad tracks and a little further off. Those lots came with a free or discounted pass on the Ashland Accommodation, which was a train that went from Broad Street Station to our station in Ashland. There was a little Y-E, which is a turnaround on the railroad tracks, which right now that Y is covered up by Randolph-Macon's parking lot. So here we are. We've got the Ashland Accommodation. There are people who either have summer homes or permanent homes in Ashland. And so it's becoming a beautiful little village. Then comes the Civil War, which was quite traumatic all over the South. There was a huge debate in Ashland between Williams Carter Wickham, who was an industrialist and a plantation owner, who led one side of the debate against secession, and St. George Tucker, who was the headmaster of the Ashland Male Academy in Ashland. And he was fervent. He was a hot-headed, fervent young man who wanted to, who really wanted us to go to war. And obviously, Mr. Tucker's side won, and he closed down the school. He organized the Ashland Grays. A lot of his students followed him off to war. Williams Carter Wickham, even though he had voted against secession, he became a general in the war, and years later became a senator in the Virginia legislature. The other fellow, St. George Tucker, died of consumption in 1863 from the war. The Confederacy, Ashland, there wasn't a lot of real important battles in Ashland. There were two. The most important one, I guess, was in 1864, the Battle of Ashland. It involved Hanover Courthouse and some soldiers, some Union soldiers coming through and meeting some Confederate soldiers, and there was a big clash right there on the tracks. But mostly, Ashland experienced the skirmishes where the soldiers would come and tear up the railroad tracks and cut the telegraph lines and just disrupt communication and transportation, which, of course, the company would come and retie the lines, relay the tracks, and everything was okay within a day. In most cases, the civilians were not hurt. There is a story of one person who was shot, but not because she was in the doorway watching. But in most cases, they didn't mean to, in war in those days, they didn't mean to hurt the civilians. They it was combatants against combatants. In 1861, even before the final vote to secede, the Confederacy rented the race course in Ashland. Ashland had a race course also. They rented the race course property, and they used it to train the Confederate cavalry. That lasted for about a year, or a little less than a year, probably 8 months. And when the cavalry left for the war, the refugees came. You know, it was very expensive to live in Richmond, but people from, like, Fredericksburg, where there were a lot of battles, and in Alexandria, they would move down to Richmond, and when Richmond became filled or too expensive, a lot of people would come to these rental cottages in Ashland. They even divided up the ballroom of the hotel company, and had families living there. We have, from the Confederate soldiers, we have letters written home that have been published, and from the refugees, we have diaries that describe Ashland just wonderfully. The problem is we don't have any photographs during the Civil War of Ashland. So if anybody out there knows of any photographs, we would love them. But the verbal descriptions of Ashland during the Civil War are precious. An English lady was coming through town in 1861, right at the beginning of the war. It was before Ashland had been harmed at all. And she described the resort with wonderful little cottages with Brussels lace decoration, gaily painted, many colors, and just a very pastoral setting. Came through a few years later and talked about how it really had seen the worst of the war. Another woman, who wrote in a Southern diary, her name was Mrs. McGuire. Her daughter-in-law was married to the Episcopal Bishop of Richmond. Johns was his last name. Anyway, so they were quartered in Ashland, and she described every battle, every skirmish. Mrs. Stebbins's son came back from the war ill, and he died of consumption, like so many of the soldiers did. She described a skirmish where, in the middle of the night, Union soldiers came in, tore up the tracks, and burned down the train station. And she said that once they were gone, everybody who had been hiding behind their curtains watching came out, and she said the picture was very funny because they were all dressed in their finest clothes with their hoping to save them if they got burnt out. So they had the finest clothes on, all their jewelry, and their pockets filled with as much cash as they could. So that was also she had a very dry sense of humor about some of this, some of the happenings in Ashland.
You're hearing from Roseanne Schauf, who is president of the Ashland Museum Board of Directors. And Roseanne, you're describing some wonderful things. That spa, that the original, is any of that still around?
No, would that it were.
What happened?
Well, after the war, everything was bankrupt. The whole South was bankrupt, but Ashland was just in tatters. So there was this little college, Methodist College down in Boynton, Virginia, that was also not in very good financial shape. So they wanted to get close to a railroad track so that it would be easier for students to get there. So they realized that the RFMP had both a race course and a resort that was for sale. And so they bargained with them. Actually, they were supposed to live on the, they were supposed to take the race course, but because the Slash Cottage Resort had all these wonderful buildings, they first settled there. But eventually it became permanent. That they settled on the Slash Cottage property instead of the race course. Anyway, so they came to Ashland. They opened their first class, I think, in 1868. They began using the resort buildings, and one by one they built solid brick scholastical buildings. The students built. It was Washington Franklin Literary Society's Hall. This building was built in 1872. In 1980s, Bunny Mellon gave us a grant to restore that building. And today it is one of the showplaces of the campus. It is the home of the history department, lecture halls, and offices.
So the campus took over what had been the spa and the hotel?
Yes. And gradually all the frame buildings, cute little frame buildings of the hotel were replaced by college buildings.
Now, nobody recognizes the name of the college that you just mentioned.
Randolph-Macon College.
Well, that is today.
Yes. The college literally saved the town. All of a sudden, there were students coming, faculty coming. There was a reason for a grocery store and a bar. And as a matter of fact, by the turn of the century, there were several grocery stores. They were called markets. There was Stebbins, there was Kidd, there was Pereira Napier, and then in 1922 there was Cross Brothers Market. All of them were fairly similar in the way they operated. They'd deliver your groceries, and if you wanted, or you'd come in, and all the canned goods would be up on the wall. There'd be ladders. You'd point to what you wanted, and they'd put it in a sack for you. Business boomed in Ashland after the college came. Real estate took off. Those lots that I talked about were subdivided. There was a building boom in the 1870s, and the buildings that had already been there, the houses, mostly houses, that were already there, got new facelifts of mostly Italianate and what they call Second Empire mansard roofs and stuff like that. So they got their facelifts, and then new buildings were built and business buildings were built. There wasn't much business there before because the resort had most of the business. They had a corner on the business. But then we got a downtown business district. In 1893, part of the downtown business district burned to the ground, and it was rebuilt in brick instead of frame. And today, pretty much since the turn of the century, it looks the same. It has hardly changed. If you look at the old pictures of Ashland and from the turn of the century, and if you look at Ashland today, you're seeing the same buildings. We don't have so many grocery stores. We only have one, Cross Brothers Market. They actually came in 1912. In 2012, they celebrated their 100th anniversary. In 2013, D.B. Cox and Company celebrated, that building celebrated its 100th anniversary. Today, people know it as the Iron Horse. Originally, in 1913, when it was built, it was D.B. Cox and Company department store. So Ashland had a department store, two-story department store. It had everything, everything you needed.
Something interesting about Ashland, you mentioned that the railroad created the town, but today the railroad is going right through the middle of town.
That's right.
And
the finest part of the business district, the finest part of the residential district is along the railroad tracks.
But you have a railroad running right through your front yard.
That's right. And that's the prime real estate. It's so weird. When we moved here in 1975, the real estate person that took us around didn't want to show us any of those buildings because he was sort of embarrassed about it. But once you get in Ashland, you realize that's the center of town. That's the center of life. Today you sit at Iron Horse Restaurant on the outside in good weather, and you look out and you see the trains coming by. And you wave to the Amtrak people. You sit in front of what used to be Barnes's drugstore. Today it's Homemade's by Suzanne. But you have a meal there, and you can wave to the trains as they go by. We're always full of what we call trainos, rail fans, who come with their cameras and their recording devices to take pictures and record the trains coming by. We are just a mecca for those kind of people. And just around the corner, we now have Ashland Museum.
Where is that?
Well,
people may want to go.
That's right. It's on Hanover Avenue. You know, you go through Ashland on Route 54 England Street. But like all the streets in town, once you cross the railroad tracks, the names change. It's very confusing to outsiders, and who knows why they did it. But anyway, across the railroad tracks, it's Thompson Street and Hanover Avenue. Hanover Avenue is an angled street off to the south. And in that first block, right behind the Iron Horse Restaurant, is Ashland Museum. And the way we tell people to look for it is it's next to the Red Caboose. The Red Caboose was brought there by Sharon Chidsey as a store. She had railroad memorabilia there in the 80s. And she no longer has the store there, so we now use it as an exhibit for our little museum.
Is the exhibit open daily? Can people
visit?
No,
we are open by appointment. So you can call us or get on our website and make a request. Or if you want to, it is open on the weekends, Saturday from 10 to 2, Sunday from 12:30 to 2:30. As I said, also by appointment, we're pleased to open it for anybody who wants to come through and see it. We have exhibits that run from 1836 all the way through to 1900. We're working on our next exhibit that'll take you to about 1940. And we have other exhibits. We have a little model train that kids can actually play with. We also have a model store counter where you can buy penny candy just like you could at Mr. Mayberg's store downtown. There's a Civil War dress. There are Civil War bonnets that you can try on, Civil War hats and train hats that you can try on and get your picture taken. There are also artifacts from the railroad and the trolley. You know, Ashland also had a trolley. In about 1908 through about 1938, there was a trolley that ran from where Richmond Glass is today in Richmond on Broad Street, all the way to England and Maple Street in Ashland, and there where the post office is today. Well, actually, the 1938 post office. And it was It was actually built originally by the Gould family, the robber baron family. And I think they really wanted to compete with the RFMP, but they got around it by saying that they were really building it up to Ashland, and then they were going to take it off down to the Northern Neck and pick up the freight from Northern Neck. This is a little bit of Virginia history. In the Northern Neck, it was an agricultural area, and the only way they could get their stuff to market was to put it on boats and take it up to Baltimore, believe it or not. And so this was a way of capturing, the state saw it as a way of capturing that that market. So, or those goods for market. So, so for a short while we had that, a little trolley. Today it, in some places, except for Henrico, which didn't go along with it, but in the Hanover County area, it is what they call a linear park. It's an old right-of-way. The old right-of-way is maintained for people to ride horses or walk along in the woods. It's just really pretty. It's raised area.
On the old trolley?
On the old trolley line. Mr. Quarles told me that they dug up the tracks of the old trolley, sent them to Japan, and they were shot back at our soldiers as bullets. The irony of that is really funny. What happened, though, in 1938 and the 1920s? In the 1920s, there began a decline of the railroad passenger traffic because of the automobile. The automobile became more and more ubiquitous.
How did that affect Ashland?
It affected it a lot. Route 1 was built through Ashland in 1928. The old livery company, Luck Livery, became Luck Motor Company and moved down to Route 1, where Hardee's is today. Loving Ford started selling Fords. Luck Motor sold Chevrolets. People started driving around the countryside in cars coming through Ashland. Of course, we were lucky. We were, the Route 1 came right through us, and so our business section sort of moved in that direction instead of along the railroad tracks. And eventually, as everybody knows, I-95 parallels Route 1. That came through in 1965. And then in 1971, Amtrak was founded to take the burden of passenger traffic away from the railroad company so they could be just freight. Freight pays for itself. Passenger rail doesn't. Passenger rail, by the way, never pays for itself. Nowhere in the world does it pay for itself. Governments pay for it because just like governments pay for roads, governments pay for rail because it facilitates the transportation of goods and services and people. And so it's an economic engine. But for some reason in the 1970s, people did not see that government was paying for the highways. They only resented money that went to the rail. So they created Amtrak and told Amtrak, you have to pay for yourself with your fees. And of course, as Dick Beatles, one of the RFMP's former presidents, said, you know, they thought they were going to preside over the eventual obliteration of passenger rail, but the darn thing grew, and it grew. There was an 18-year period where the passenger rail Amtrak quit stopping in Ashland. In, I think it was 1985, the president of Randolph-Macon and the town of Ashland got together and wrote letters to Amtrak and said, please, please, have a stop here. We have students who would use this. A good hunk of the students came from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and could travel. Well, that they started with one or two stops. And now there are, somebody else will have to tell you what the figure is, but it's five or six stops from 6:30 in the morning to 9 at night. And that, the little Ashland station now is home to a whole lot of rail traffic, passenger traffic. So we're real proud of that.
so much interesting history of the town of Ashland. How many residents today would you say?
7,000, including the about 1,200 or 1,300 students at Randolph-Macon.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Roseanne Schauf is the president of the Ashland Museum Board of Directors. You are listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.